You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida. Thank you for joining us for part two of the Flasco Oncopod. Updates in IDHM gliomas, led by Dr. Ashley Giaseddon.
Thank you. Following 6 months of additional follow-up on the Indigo study, what we see is vorasidenib treatment confirms efficacy with increased progression-free survival and time to next intervention. We don't have new safety concerns. The exploratory endpoint suggests that patients on Vora arm have lower seizure rates compared to the placebo arm, which is important for our neurology colleagues. The vorasidenib reduces the tumor volume, and this is observed even in patients that cross over to vorasidenib. The vorasidenib in improved progression-free survival regardless of tumor volume at baseline or pre-treatment tumor growth rate. And I spoke again previously that the FDA approval in August of 2024 gave vorasidenib's indication for astrocytoma IDH mutated WHO grade 2 and oligodendroglioma WHO grade 2 tumors. So now I ask, is there a change in our treatment paradigm? For low risk grade 2 gliomas that are IDH1-2 mutated, with residual disease, no urgency to start chemotherapy or radiation, in the physician's estimation and talking with the patient, we should be giving vorasidenib. I think that's reasonable to consider for our patients. When there's a gross total resection, no visible disease, I don't think we know the best answer. These are people that we may want to observe versus giving them vorasidenib. And that's something that will play out, I think, in the next couple of years. What do we do for our recurrent patients who have not had IDH inhibitors? Do we give them a monotherapy IDH inhibitor like vorasidenib, or do we need to consider combinatorial approaches? And what do we do for our grade 3 patients? Is there a role for adding an IDH inhibitor up front with chemo radiation? So questions that are still unanswered that we need to answer in the coming months and years. When we think of treatment decisions in a world with IDH inhibitors, I think it's important to note that many patients who have grade 3 IDH mutated astrocytoma or oligodendrogliomas, they are living beyond 10 years. Histologic grading can be subjective in IDH mutant gliomas, which can contribute to the survival overlap between the grades. And I highlight this because I think it's very important when we talk about the overlap, that the overall survival in IDH mutated astrocytomas in grade 2 can be 10.9 years, recent studies, versus 9.3 years in grade 3. So you can see that there is a significant overlap there. The histology is subjective, which implies a sharp cutoff for grades is somewhat artificial, given the inherent continuum of the tumor biology. I think there are some factors that show association with histological grade, which includes the gadolinium enhancement on imaging, as well as the molecular findings. Specifically, we know that CD kinase 2AB homozygous deletions is an established criterion for IDH mutated astrocytoma WHO grade 4, and it's also been shown to have a less favorable prognosis. Even a hemizygous deletion has been associated with a shorter survival. We know that MYC gain associated with risk of gaining post-temozolomide hypermutated phenotype, and all things that need to be considered. There are several that in IDH mutated and 1P19 co-deleted oligodendrogliomas are not well validated, but can be suggested. And some of these mutations may include the PIK3CA in NOTCH1, an absence of mutation in TERT, which is quite rare in the oligos, less than 5%, as well as P10 alterations. And then when we think about the traditional factors that we would discuss with patients, and that was the age cutoffs and other symptoms that they had, the size of the tumors, we need to potentially revisit those. The strict use of 40 years of age to imply high risk, shouldn't be using that anymore. There's recent available evidence that can show a cutoff in the range of 50 to 60 years is more appropriate when we consider patients for being higher risk. And then for extended resection, when we talk about quantitative postoperative tumor volume, I think we need to consider what that looks like after surgery. At the first diagnosis, when we think of presence of contrast enhancement on MRI, this can be associated with a tumor grade in IDH mutated gliomas, though the finding is neither sensitive or specific. We do think of contrast enhancement, however, to suggest a transformation to a higher grade malignancy. I think up to 50% of grade 2 oligodendrogliomas, we understand, may show some enhancement, and considerable amount of grade 3 oligos do not. 20 to 50% of the grade in IDH mutated astrocytomas, they may also show some form of enhancement. So things that we need to consider. In addition to the INDIGO study, there's clinical trials that are using IDH inhibitors that have shown some activity. IDH1 inhibitors, ivosidenib, olutasidenib, safusidenib, and the IDH1/2 inhibitor, vorasidenib, they have all been considered in recurrent tumors. Some studies looking at enhancing tumors or grade 3 tumors. And then looking at results like this, I think it's important to remember that real-world data is needed to provide it much needed patient guidance when we're making clinical decisions for these patients. The questions that I had coming out of the conference that we recently had for the Society of Neuro-Oncology was really thinking about treatment guidelines. They often base recommendations from historical series of grade 2-3 gliomas that were both IDH wild type and IDH mutated patients prior to the WHO grade 2021 classification update. So which patients do we know are going to respond best to IDH inhibitors? And I think another concern that people have asked is, do these IDH inhibitors affect tumor biology? Should we be concerned for tumor resistance? And this highlights a need to really understand potential resistant mechanisms. And what do we do at progression for tumors that are treated with IDH inhibitors? Do they continue the IDH inhibitor plus another chemo agent? Or do we switch the current IDH inhibitor for another IDH inhibitor that's available for that patient? I think it's important to understand the unknown implications of delaying radiation and chemotherapy. There are patients where we should not be delaying radiation and chemotherapy. And I would highlight that the original INDIGO study, its intent was not to delay radiation and chemotherapy for all patients, but specifically enroll patients where the treating team was going to be observing those patients after their surgery for one reason or another. I think it's important when you look at this data to really consider, do we still watch and wait after a gross total resection for IDH mutated gliomas? This can be something very difficult to consider, but there are downstream effects. With observation, these patients, they are able to have family planning. They're not tied to a medication, although it has really minimal side effects from what we can see thus far. When you compare it to the toxic chemotherapy agents that we consider for our patients, we need to remember that there is no current really guidance on when to stop this therapy. So, you're going to be on this therapy potentially for years. However, if there's evidence that shows, being on a medication earlier on can lead to better overall survival, that may change how we look at watch and wait methods for patients who have gross total resection. And it's an important thing when we talk about the concept of grains of sand and not really a grape and jello. If these tumors are diffuse and infiltrative, can we honestly say that there is ever a time where we can achieve a gross total resection? The treatment decisions that we consider, we know aren't just based on guidelines or based on meetings, but they're really based on the communication and partnership that we have with our patients. There's family planning decisions, and there's cognitive concerns that we need to consider. in patients who are 10 to 15 years out post radiation, when we think of the young patients, and these are the patients that were ultimately going to be affected by this new treatment paradigm with IDH mutated gliomas. Although we may have patients that are in their 50s and 60s, ultimately, this is a disease that is mainly for patients who are in their 30s and 40s, their early prime working years of their lives, where they're maybe providing for their family, caretakers for others. So it's very important to think about the effects that treatment may have, not just radiation therapy, but even cytotoxic chemotherapy. What do those downstream effects look like? And then in carefully selected patients who have grade 2-3 IDH mutated gliomas, I think we need to understand that delaying radiation and chemotherapy may not worsen their outcomes. Close surveillance is necessary. This isn't a patient population where we can really afford to, say, have a scan in 12, 18 months. I think with the advent of the new guidelines and treatment options that are provided, we need to rethink the surveillances that we use. And maybe you start with every 2 to 3 months, but you don't go past every 6 months, especially for patients that you're observing. At the first sign of change, we want to consider treatment, whether it's an IDH inhibitor or maybe for the right patient, it's proceeding with chemoradiation. So these are no longer patients that after 5 years, we can say, well, maybe we get a scan every 12 to 18 months. This will need lifelong close follow-up. And that's a change potentially for patients as well. I leave with a picture that really highlights what I talk about with the toxicity that can come from chemoradiation. And this is a patient with an astrocytoma that's IDH mutant grade 3. And 12 years after their initial diagnosis and following the treatment that they received, they have no progression. They are doing, they're off of their therapy. And relatively speaking, from a cancer standpoint, we would say this is a patient that is radiographically stable, no evidence of recurrence. But oftentimes, this is the type of patient that clinically is suffering. They are not able to do their activities of daily living. They are not independent in the home and require constant observation. And although their cancer may be in a hard to say with gliomas, remission, but we can say at least stable and no signs of growth, there still are many side effects that we need to consider, and they still require supportive care measures for. So ultimately, by having treatments like this, we really want to afford an opportunity to potentially delay chemoradiation treatments in the right patient population, understanding that it may not be for everyone. And then I'll end with just a study that we have open here at the University of Florida. And this is our Adagio study, which is an adoptive cellular therapy platform for the treatment of recurrent oligodendroglioma adult patients. In the role of the oligodendrogliomas, the treatment options we know we've discussed chemo, radiation, and now IDH inhibitors, but clinical trials is something that specifically for this patient population have been few and far between. I spoke to you about the Indigo study, and I know that there are some studies that are coming on board with IDH inhibitors, but really it's rare that you see a study designed specifically for oligodendrogliomas. So I wanted to just share this with the community as a whole that we have a study that will enroll up to 6 patients, evaluable subjects. So we would have up to 12 patients total because we think about screen failures. And we want to evaluate the feasibility and safety of adoptive cellular therapy that's combined with an IDH1/2 inhibitor in patients who have recurrent or progressive oligodendrogliomas, whether it be WHO grade 2 or WHO grade 3. And, after this webinar, the Flasco team, they have my contact, and please feel free to reach out if you ever have any questions about this study or others in the future. With that, I will end the lecture portion and really open it up to any thoughts and comments. I will thank you for your attention. And I will also say that I realize this is not a one size fits all. And in the world of neuro-oncology, I have learned very quickly that there's not always one right approach, but there are several different approaches that we need to consider. And we do that because we want to identify ways that we can best help our patients and realize that every situation is going to be unique and different. And that's why the work that I do, the work that you do in caring for your patients is so critical, and really the importance of a multidisciplinary team. So I can tell you at our program, these conversations are not done lightly, but they are in consultation with the surgeons, the pathologists, and most importantly, I think in this specific patient population, with our radiation oncologists, right? This is not possible in a vacuum, but it must be done collectively as a team. Thank you.